Hamilton, myself, Senator Terrio, Senator Huggins, and Senator Betty Davis here, so we do have a quorum to conduct business. We have one bill on the docket today, that is Senate Bill 290, and the prime sponsor is Senator Charlie Huggins. Senator Huggins, did you want to introduce the bill, or do you have staff to do that?
I'd like to bring it, I move that we bring Senate Bill number 290 before the committee as a working document.
Okay. Without a CS, the version would be automatically before us. You'd like your staff?
Yeah, Mr. Josh Temple here will be presenting today.
Hey, Josh, if you just put yourself on the record there and then take us through the bill.
My name's Josh Temple. I'm staff for Senator Huggins. I'll be presenting Senate Bill 290.
Go ahead.
Specialist Jacob Eugene Melson, 22 years old, survived by his wife Sarah, his mother Teresa, his father Mark. First Lieutenant Jamie Lynn Campbell, 25 years old, survived by her husband Samuel, her father Jeffrey, her mother Mickey. Chief Warrant Officer 4, Chester William Troxell, 45 years old, survived by his wife Cherie, his 17-year-old son Hollis, and his 14-year-old daughter Summer. Specialist Michael Ignatius Edwards, 26 years old, survived by his fiancée Danielle O'Brien, his 6-year-old son Elijah, and his 1-year-old daughter Destiny. These are the brave National Guard soldiers which Alaska lost in a helicopter crash in Iraq on January 7, 2006. Husbands, wives, and parents. There have been times in our nation's history that the citizens of America have fallen short in showing appreciation for our troops and their sacrifices. Let us never make those mistakes again. Presently in our country, there are many people who profess their support and appreciation, but true support goes beyond words and displaying of yellow ribbons. So let us ensure the words we expend are not idle, but that we stand and actively show appreciation to Jacob, Jamie, Chester, Michael, and all the rest of our troops in the Alaska National Guard who are making our way of life possible. Senate Bill 290 amends Alaska Statute 26.05 by adding a new section that would let the citizens of Alaska say thank you to our National Guard troops by reimbursing them for their life insurance premiums while they are in a combat zone, retroactive to January 1, 2006. Currently, a soldier in the Alaska National Guard receives $400,000 in life insurance coverage for a premium of $27 a month. While our National Guard troops are on the bloody edge, carrying out the desire of our nation, we must ensure that they have confidence in the event of tragedy that we will take care of their families. May it never be said that we did not care about Michael's 1-year-old son, Elijah, or Chester's 14-year-old daughter, Summer, after Michael and Chester bravely gave their lives for us. Paying our troops life insurance policy is a very meaningful act. So let us take this opportunity to tell our troops that while they are under fire in a place none of us would like to be, we thank them and are in the rear caring for their families and loved ones. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Alaska National Guard, for securing my freedom.
Okay, my understanding, the way the bill works, Section 1 sets up a fund to hold appropriations that's subject to subsection C would be eligible for the Commissioner and Department of Revenue to pay the premiums out if the individual submits for reimbursement. Is that correct?
Reimbursement.
Okay. So it's not an automatic payment. It's if the service member submits for reimbursement. And then Senator Huggins, I'm trying to remember under section D there on page 2, lines 5 and 6, except as provided in C of this section, money in the fund is available for expenditure without further appropriation. So if it is available without further appropriation, it is non-sweepable by the CBR sweep at the end of the year? Is that why that language is in there?
No, as I understand, it doesn't have to be appropriated again. Is that correct, John? It doesn't have to be appropriated again for the reimbursement. Does that make sense?
Okay, perhaps we need to have somebody from the department come forward just to answer some technical questions.
Th- Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is John Kramer. I'm the Admin Service Director for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. I believe that section is referring to what Senator, the Chairman, was talking about, and that is once the appropriation is made, it's there to be utilized as it was appropriated. There needs to be money put into the fund to establish the fund to get it up and running. And I think that was the question that was asked for.
Well, I'm just mindful of the sweep provision that we have with the CBR. And, of course, there's a debt owed to the CBR. At the end of every fiscal year, every dollar that is available, quote, unquote,
yes,
according to the court's interpretation, is swept automatically into the CBR. And, of course, in years past, we have made a reverse appropriation back into every one of those funds. But there is a way of setting up the funds so that the surpluses do not get swept. And I'm just wondering if this language here, subsection D, specifically gets to that so that you don't have to be part of that yearly reverse sweep?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's accurate. I can't say with utmost certainty, but I think you're accurate.
Okay.
It would be the preference of the sponsor that it not be sweepable so it would remain there because of the need and the circumstances involved.
Okay. Okay. And then we do have a definition here of it's not, it's only the premiums for those individuals who are going into an active combat zone. So that's some limitation on it. And we've got a definition section here. And it's retroactive to January 1st of this year.
Correct.
I read through the bill before the hearing. I didn't take much time to look at the explanation on the fiscal note. Why is it, let's see, this does not have a sunset on it. Why is it that we only have 2 years expenditure spelled out here on the fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman, I believe the reason why you only see the 2 years is because we know that we're going to have deployments over the next 2 years. Beyond that, we don't know what's going to take place on the war. And so we gave you what we knew for the next 2 years.
Okay. Other questions from committee members? Senator Elton.
Question for maybe the sponsor and for the department. I mean, I'm curious as to what the fiscal note might be if we made the effective date January 1st of 2005. And the reason I'm asking that question is we have troops that have been deployed or already back that would be eligible under this for 1 month reimbursement, but not for the length of their deployment.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, to Senator Elton, I think if we go back to 2005, in other words, one additional year, I think we would be looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of around 300 soldiers that would be eligible for additional reimbursement.
And would it be fair to say then, and I'm thinking out loud, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Would it be fair to say then, I mean, is the expectation 700 deployed this year?
Through the chair to Senator Elton, we anticipate around 700 up to 1,000 this year.
Okay. So if, in fact, we wanted to make it retroactive to January before this January, we'd be looking at a potential addition to the fiscal note of $120,000-$130,000, and I'm just working that through on the top of my head. Mr. Chair, and for the sponsor, I mean, I think this is a great idea. I told the sponsor that I signed on as a co-sponsor, but I would hope that we would consider making it retroactive so that all of the Alaska National Guard members who have been deployed last year, this year, and next year would benefit from the program. That would be my suggestion.
Right. Yeah. And I'll coordinate with Mr. Kramer. We'll take a look at the numbers so we get some certainty into it and would not be objectionable to that, assuming the number is manageable. which I believe it is.
Okay, other questions?
Well, Mr. Chair, if I might, I'd just like to point out that Josh and Mr. Kramer and some others in the room have done some research on this, and looking at how to do it in the reimbursement aspect appears to be by far the smartest way, because otherwise administering becomes a real pain, and proactively, and there's just a lot of problems involved with it, and reimbursement. And I just would like to thank Mr. Kramer and DMVA for the legwork they did on this, because when we began discussing it, we all recognized the merit, but every time we ran down one of the avenues of how to do it, we ran into a dead end, and John in particular did some homework on this, and I just say thanks to you for what you did on it.
Can you tell me, under the service members group life insurance, is it mandatory that they sign up for that? Is it voluntary? Is it voluntary? Premium is paid out of their paycheck automatically, or do they have the option of just paying with a check monthly? Or
through the chair, Josh might be able to answer that better since he just got back from over there. But I believe how it works is they choose whether they want to select that life insurance, the amount that they choose. The premium is deducted from their pay automatically.
Mm-hmm.
So
as far as a record of them having paid it, there's going to be a state pay stub or something that it's
federal.
An easy record to verify.
Yes,
or federal. Yeah. Senator Elton,
a question for the department, maybe, or Josh, you may know the answer to. I mean, what it is voluntary. I mean, it would seem administratively cleaner if, since it is a reimbursement program, it would seem administratively cleaner if you put in that an application for reimbursement should be made, you know, within 2 years of return. I mean, otherwise you carry forward, you know, for the life of that soldier, you kind of carry forward the opportunity, and you never know what the hit on the fund might be. And I'm just wondering if you have a reaction to that notion.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, we did consider that, and one of the thoughts that we had talked about, at least internally, was if this is appropriated and makes it through in the regulation, we thought that we would put in some constraints that would specifically say within so many years after your return, da 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 da, some of that type of language. But we didn't put it in the bill or suggest that it be put in a bill. I suppose that it could be.
Mm-hmm. I think it's something, and I don't know whether it needs to be in the bill, but it just seems to me that we could have an ongoing liability, you know,
yeah,
for many, many years without
yeah,
really knowing how big the fund should be.
Mm-hmm. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thanks. it's a good point, and I, like Mr. Kramer, envision that be part of the implementing instructions, so that, I mean, number one, we have the advantage for the ordinary people that come back. It's by and large, it's group rotations, unit rotations. There are some individual replacements. So as they derose out of theater, then we process them normal. But there's always the aberrational of somebody's been injured or gets medevaced for one reason or another, which individually, and then we have to police that up. But having a limitation in the implementing instructions as applied by the DMVA in your regulations would make sense, and I would highly recommend we do that. I think probably putting it in the bill might clutter it up a little bit, in my estimation.
And do you feel that there's any problem with doing that in regulation, whether they'd be challenged then if somebody is past the regulatory cutoff date? Would they come back to the statutes and say, wait a minute, the legislature didn't put any cutoff date in here?
Mr. Chairman, I suppose there could be that chance that someone would say that, but I think if we if Department of Revenue working with us implemented some regulations fairly swiftly, and it was there and it was part of a package that they got on their rotation out or mm-hmm. something where it specifies that you have this amount of time to apply, I think we might be safe. I certainly wouldn't want to deny someone that benefit, you know, because they missed it by a day or something. But I think if they know going in that there is that, and most of the National Guard members that get deployed, if we have this in front of them, they'll they'll see it for what it is and take advantage of it, I think, when they return.
And if I might, Mr. Chair, one of the things that comes to bear is in the pre-deployment packets, there's a checklist of sorts that you go through, and it's a full packet, power of authority, power of attorney, and all those sorts of things, which is there for the service member. No matter what happens to the service member, you have all these delineations of authority for a number of scenarios which would come to play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Are there any other individuals that wish to testify? Or do we have anybody on teleconference? Okay. Senator Huggins?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, there's one other aspect. There was some discussion about merging. And Mr. Kramer, would you just introduce that to us and any thoughts you might have on it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Huggins, the Department of Fish and Game has wanted to honor National Guard members and bring them back into Alaska with open arms by offering to provide them a fishing and hunting license. Just as a token of their gratitude from the state, you know, and welcome them back because, you know, the fishing and hunting gives them a feeling of being home and being safe and being secure and being able to do the things that they did before they left. And in essence, that's what they'd like to do as deployed soldiers that return, be able to offer that.
Yeah. So with that in mind, I would prefer that we, you know, that we take a look at that provision and we can hold the bill over. I don't think there's any rush at this point in time. And look at melding those together and make sure the compatibility and the understanding of Fish and Game and DMVA in particular and bring it back to the committee.
Okay. Is there, just looking at the fiscal notes, sorry, seems fairly minimal projected hit to the Fish and Game budget.
Because we're talking about a one-time, I think it's $25, as I recall, for a hunting license. And
Mr. Chairman, I think it's $46 for a combination hunting and fishing license. I believe Fish and Game, on a bill that was introduced, had a fiscal note attached with it that was somewhere in the neighborhood that they anticipated. We had about 350 soldiers coming back from Iraq, and I think they estimated their impact at about $5,000 or something like that. Yeah. But certainly that information we can provide, make available.
Okay. So I certainly don't have a problem with considering a merger of the two bills. It would also give us an opportunity, Senator Huggins, to just check on that sweep
language. We'll bring that back.
And I'd like staff also just to check to see if we run ourselves any potential problem with a cutoff date, regulatory cutoff date, if there's not something mentioned in the statute.
Good
just
point.
To make sure that we don't cause a problem there. And certainly one thing to let people know that there's a benefit out there, and then if they do go past the date, you know, I know that I get lots of requests for assistance from constituents when they do run afoul of one of those cutoff dates. Sure. Isn't there something that we can do? So,
certainly.
Okay. With that, is there any other testimony on the bill today? Senator Huggins?
Well, Mr. Chair, I see a couple of young ladies back here to prepare, and I'm not saying that they need to come forward. I would like to recognize General Scott from the Air Guard who's with us and say thanks for coming. You know, it's... you know, I kind of served around the world once upon a time and served as an advisor to a couple, three National Guard organizations, Mexico, Alaska, and served with some others. But in my estimation, Alaska is not rivaled by many as far as the esprit de corps and dedication to getting things done. And then, of course, we come into this modern day era where, to my knowledge, we had never deployed any sizable National Guard soldiers out of Alaska, or airmen for that matter, and we're doing it wholesaling now, and I think it's a tribute to the average Alaskan recognizing the merit of the proposal, and that unhesitatingly, as we listen here, that we say, yeah, three bags full, because it's just the right thing to do. And that's heartwarming to realize that we have that sort of support in our state.
Okay. Well, that then, if there are no further questions, what we'll do is hold the bill over, allow staff to get answer to some questions. We'll request a draft that will merge the two bills together. We'll also be looking for the departments for combined fiscal notes, so that they can be sent up to the next committee.
Mr. Chair, I'm interested also in response, the retroactive.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll look at those numbers. Okay. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Okay. Okay, with that then, that's all we had on our agenda. We will adjourn for the day.